this, this is Susan, as you know. And this is
Memphis.
Memphis. And we think Memphis is a what?
Probably Catahoula and Pitt.
Kind of looks like it. Definitely Catahoula.
Yeah.
But again, he's got the big jaws of some kind of bully dog.
Yeah, and his paws, his feet really look pitty.
That kind of bony look that they
yeah.
have? Yeah. Okay. By the way, you can do a study on the feet of dogs. It's really quite fascinating. And you know, the labs have the really close-in toes and the feet and whatnot. And definitely pit bulls like this. And the Doberman pincers are like this. German shepherds have hare's feet. They're really, really long. And that's why they run like this. They look so funny when they run.
Fascinating.
Okay, so what's up with the... Memphis. What's up with Memphis?
Memphis is not very good at greeting other dogs.
Okay. What does he do?
He'll either go up to them and get right in their face and then come back screaming when they look at him. Or if he's with my other dog and my other dog, he will start getting really aggressive.
Against a strange dog. So
yeah.
If
yeah.
you and if Memphis is, what's your other dog's name?
Baxter.
So if Memphis and Baxter are together, then how's your grieving stuff, by the way? All the stuff that you're having problems with?
Oh, it's up and down.
Okay, I'm going to talk to them about that. Okay. So, what would you say his temperament is like?
He's usually very mellow.
Uh-huh.
He likes people, but he also is, Catahoulas are kind of loners. I mean, he's more affectionate. I have a Catahoula, Baxter's Catahoula, Kelpie,
uh-huh.
red nose mix. And he's standoffish. He comes to you.
A little bit more independent.
Yeah, he's kind of sticks to you at times.
Okay. And you've had him, how old is he now?
He's 3 and a half. And I've had him since he was maybe 5 months. I don't know how old he was when I got him.
Where'd you get him?
He came from the Fresno Valley and he was a stray on the streets.
Okay. And so his, and so what was he like this from the beginning? What is his temperament like? What do you feel like?
I feel like his temperament is good, but when he turned 3, it's kind of shifting.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Orchard the other day, and there was a gentleman around the corner, and he actually growled, and I've never heard him growl at anybody. Yeah, and that
did the guy look very different?
I mean, he was just a tall
guy. Tall guy?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have a hat on or anything like that, but I've never seen him react that way.
Okay. Does he normally like to actually move people?
Yeah, he does.
And he's pretty friendly with them?
Yeah.
Is he territorial at home? Not much?
No.
You didn't read that part of the book?
No.
Good. That's part of the book.
The only place, I take that back, the only place he's territorial, he's on the bed and somebody else wants to get on the bed. But all I do is just give him the look, and he stops right away. He's learned that that's not okay.
Okay. So you have him and Baxter, and what else?
Do you have? And there's a 6-year-old lab that is very out of control.
Very out of control?
Very out of control.
In what way?
She's a really aggressive lab.
To other dogs?
To other dogs. She mm-hmm. hasn't actually bitten other dogs, but she gets right on top, just like, you know, the kill bite.
Uh-huh.
I don't trust her.
So, and how long have you had her?
She's my tenant. She's been there since she was 8 months old.
She's your tenant?
Tenant's dog.
Oh, she's your tenant's dog.
But they go, the dogs in our main girl, they go up and down. Uh-huh. In the house, they
and she gets along well with these guys.
Yeah.
Has there ever been any kind of incident where she's done anything to Memphis?
No, but she has played too rough, and he's yelped, and it scares him, and then he'll sort of back off for a little bit. And then, you know, he kind of forgets, and we'll go back to her.
Do you think of Memphis as being fairly sensitive?
Yeah.
It does seem like a sensitive soul.
Yeah.
Okay. And what would you like to see?
I'd like to see him be better with dogs, on greeting with dogs, or just meeting dogs. It looks like he's scared. It's like he doesn't know what to do. So when he does, he'll either back away or he'll bark and go forward.
Okay. Could you describe when he's on leash when this is going on?
No, he can do it
when he's off leash as well.
Yeah.
So he'll kind of do this conflict behavior, back up, go forward, go back, or whatever. And what have you done to try to help him?
Well, I don't take him to dog parks anymore because I feel that that's too much for him. Uh-huh. And if I do take him anyplace out, I avoid people like crazy because, for one thing, I'm out there with my dogs. I'm not out there to socialize.
So you're out there to walk your dogs?
Yeah.
Do you take all three?
Or just no, two? I don't take the three anymore.
Okay.
The lab does not go, and I try to once a week take him by himself. And I take Baxter by himself.
So when he goes by himself, he does a conflict behavior. When he's with Baxter, sometimes he's a little bit more
He's more aggressive because he's, I think he knows it.
Oh, there's power in numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. There definitely is.
What really bothered me the most is we were at the ball, and we were just doing our normal walk off leash, and there was a little something, chihuahua mix. And Baxter started going after it, set him off, and they were having a great time scaring and chasing this little dog. They didn't catch him.
You can actually let him go.
Is that okay?
That would be fine. You've got the little dog in the crate.
Yeah,
that one's in the crate. The other little dog is in the crate. Yeah, okay. You didn't even know we had a little dog in there, right? It's a 6-week-old dog that needs a home. Okay, so go on.
Their intent was, I don't know if they would have actually done anything if they caught the little dog, but it was definitely one setting the other one off. And I'm afraid that his behavior might escalate. Both he and Baxter will kill cats outside. I know that. And Baxter has killed a cat.
Okay. Well, I think that you were right to be worried. There are an awful lot of feral cats on the bus of all, aren't there?
Well, and by my house and all over the place. Yeah. There's tons of them.
Okay, so you would like the dog to, you would like Memphis to be able to greet other dogs or just to get past other dogs, or what do you want?
At least to get past them. When he's in the store and there's other dogs, if I'm walking them out of the store or walking them into the office, he gets really agitated.
Okay, so this is where you work?
Yeah.
Okay, so tell everybody where you work.
Oh, I work at Pet Food Express, and we bring our dogs. Well, I bring him a couple times a week.
And so he sometimes is not good with the dogs in the store? Do you think he's territorial in the store, or do you think this is...
The store, I think he's possessive in the store.
Okay. Well, gosh, if I were a dog, I would be.
Yeah.
That's kind of a nice place to be. All right. So I'm going to open it up to questions. If you guys have any questions, please.
Well, he just looked, when we started, like he was, to me, very frightened. Mm-hmm. He was panting.
He's still frightened.
Eyes. Yeah. I'm not sure that he's not really fearful.
I think he is. I think that's probably the reason for his behavior, but he's also social. So what she's talking about with his conflict behavior is very real.
Change.
Yeah. It's like, you know, if you're an introverted person and you go to a party and you'd really like to meet everybody, but you can't quite bring yourself to it, you know. And I know this very well. After a couple of drinks, I'm fine. Or if everybody says they love dogs, I'm fine. So
counterphobic behavior.
Yeah.
Dogs have a counterphobic behavior?
I suppose yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So when you're at work with him, is he right? I mean, is he out wandering around the store?
No, he's in the office.
Okay. Are there other dogs? And how big is your office?
The office is probably 8x6.
Are there other dogs in there with you?
No, not usually.
When does he? And where does he encounter the other dogs?
When I'm taking him outside
to go potty or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's mostly on a leash, but he has done it off the leash too. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, I don't trust one, either one of them. I usually deflect it and turn the other way, or I get in front of him and we just go outside so that he doesn't get really wound up.
Okay. And, Does
he have any, unrelated, does he have any friends? Like, does he get along with your other dog, or are they just...
Yeah, all three of them get along. But he grew up with them.
So he's comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Is he comfortable at home? He's not nervous at home, right?
Yeah.
What about at work when he's at work?
He's relaxed. He loves it. He loves to go.
He likes to go.
When he wants to go, he goes to the front door and say, okay, I want to go to work.
And he's happy when he's there.
Yeah. Everyone, he gets total attention.
You think him being beaten up by the lab?
Are you really cute
with it? Are you really cute?
You are. Is that when I took him out to the potty area over there on the gravel? His tail went really tight underneath.
Yeah.
When he smelled all those smells, he you could tell.
Well, Aspen kind of wandered back there a couple times. How was he with her?
He didn't really notice her.
Because he was chewing on his bone, do you think?
Chewing on his bone and drinking water.
Huh. Okay, because I know she went back there.
And normally when he has a toy or something or food, he's not territorial with it because the lab is so horrible.
So is the lab in your tenant, does she have her or he have her their own place that they're living, or is it...
Yeah, it's a separate place and... But the dogs have always been allowed to come and go, and I'm starting to put, I'm doing times where she has to stay downstairs.
Good, because I think that, you know, she probably hasn't been a really good example for neither of the other two dogs, given her behavior problems.
No, she's not, and she is really aggressive. I mean, I've never seen an aggressive lab. But it's scary. I mean, she's 85 pounds.
The biggest problem with aggressive labs is that people think they're friendly. You
know? Oh, yeah.
So
no, she's not
it's
being
the same
friendly.
Thing with aggressive goldens. They think they're friendly, and they can't believe, even if you say, my dog is not friendly, they still can't believe it. It's a golden. It's got to be friendly. It's a lab. It's got to be friendly.
Well, she attacked a dog when we were coming back to the car. Mm-hmm. The dog was getting into his car. No reason for her to attack that dog, and she just went for it. She hadn't even seen it because it was...
There's something. It might almost be pathological.
No, I know. Yeah. And she's kind of scary.
No wonder he doesn't like other dogs, because he's got a...
Well, maybe, but I'm sure that
he has a good...
Yeah, I mean, the fear is going to be the primary thing for him, right? You don't walk them together. And have you ever walked them together with a lab?
Oh, we used to go to the park together.
And so did he see that she was not aggressive, she was not friendly to the dog?
I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
And Baxter sort of ignores them, unless they're intact, and then
he challenges them.
Yeah. He's never fought with them.
Why you have what I am?
Yeah, right. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
I don't think Memphis knows it either way. I don't think that affects.
Okay. So essentially, what have you then? You do an awful lot of avoidance.
Yeah.
So you're with him or with the two of them. You're walking along. You see a dog. You go to the other side of the street. Or
I turn around.
Turn around or go the other direction.
Yeah.
And are you afraid that he's actually going to do something naughty?
I don't know if he's going to get himself into a fight by the other dog not understanding that he's really going forward because he's fearful.
Mm. And this is when he's mostly off leash?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the ball, does he meet, I mean, you've got dogs kind of walking around there, does he meet other dogs better there?
A little bit better because it's really open and he doesn't, but he doesn't go towards other dogs. I mean,
he wants to avoid.
Yeah. He's not going to go one of these dogs that goes, oh, I really want to meet you.
Yeah.
He doesn't do that. He's really happy to be with Baxter.
Okay.
But I almost feel like he's protecting Baxter and Baxter's protecting him.
How does
kind of have his reliance?
How does Baxter greet other dogs like a couple?
He will arch his back, put his tail up, and get a little bit, his hackles. But he doesn't do anything else. He just kind of...
So he goes, there's a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. But then he...
Then he's cool. Yeah. Then he's fine. I don't bring treats to the park because I've found that that's the worst thing to... If you want to cause problems, bring treats.
Where the other dogs all come in.
Yeah, yeah. And then when they get real too close to him, he gets scared. So I don't let people feed them treats, and I don't bring treats to the park.
Okay. Would it be possible to bring treats and put them in a bag or something like that to use after something?
Yeah, well, they get them when we get back to the
park. No, I mean immediately after something.
I see.
In mind, if he were my dog, is I would be trying to teach him that you don't have to meet other dogs, it's okay not to meet other dogs, and getting past another dog is a rewardable behavior. So the idea is for him to kind of go, well, I would engage with you, but there are other things that are much more important up here. And you can either do that with your presence, or lack thereof, or with something that is over and above that. And the problem with using something like play is that there's a chance that he's too uptight to play. So, that probably isn't going to work. But what I would probably, if you were my dog, what I would be doing is giving yourself right now, because you need the space, so giving yourself right now as much space as you need. So you're walking along, you see somebody, and they're over there, you're going to kind of arc around. Obviously, you try to be not tense.
Right, it's really hard not to be expecting
to shake everything out,
yeah.
And just kind of, you're walking really calmly past. You can call your dog to you, but only at a really kind of low level. And then when you get past, you tell both of them that they're good dogs, and you very calmly give them a treat. And I would probably, at first, I would give like 1, 2, 3 treats. Just like that was really good. And I'd make sure the other dogs are going past. And nobody else is seeing these treats go. And that's the thing is, if you have an issue, particularly if you're off leash, but even on leash, you don't want other dogs to see you giving your dog a treat because they immediately go, I know what those are. And
they all run over.
They all want to come over. But if you can do it and it's a hidden behavior on your part, what happens is the dog, instead of going into conflict of, I kind of want to meet you, but I'm not absolutely sure. And then they do that little, jolt, little lunge at another dog, and then they back off and all that kind of stuff. Instead of doing that, they kind of just go, well, I'm not interested. And so then they go past. And because they're going for a reward that is going to be coming afterwards. So it takes a while because you have to teach them that this is a rewardable behavior, and if you don't even know exactly what is the rewardable behavior, just getting past another dog, whether it's on leash or off leash. If you're on leash, then you use the three treat method. You give a dog the treat right before they pass the dog, right as they're passing the dog, and then right after. But if you're off leash, you can't do that.
Right.
You absolutely have to do it, all afterwards. So you use kind of the under your breath reinforcements. This is good, you're doing well. I like this, it's really nice. And you try to be as calm as possible. And then at the end of it, you do the treat. Now, I would also, but again, I'm not, sure what you can do. I'm just, I don't know if it's any more crowded than, it didn't used to be very crowded before, it was pretty.
It's still not that crowded.
I used to go there fairly often until Luke decided he wanted to swim across the bay and stop the river. It was a problem. The only reason he's alive today is because the current took him into a spit. And then Trisha ran down and got him all the way at the end of the spit. He would have gone all the way, I swear. He was chasing the splotches. It's an OCD behavior, you know. So, but does that sound like something that would be possible for you to do?
Yeah,
because it would be it would be a really nice. It's going to be slow. It's not. This is not a speedy behavior mod by any means. But you're trying to change the behavior of a dog who is off leash with other dogs around who are off leash. So everything has to be subtle as hell. Yeah, you can't be overt. You can't kind of go, wow, that was really great. I really like that. I'm being a treat. No, none of that. Yeah, 15 dogs all going, oh, it sounds like he's going to give the dog a treat. And that's why I kind of just do one. Whoa, that was nice too. And then maybe a toss treat for a find it or something like that. But the other thing I might do in a case like this is use some non-contingent reinforcement, which I talked about earlier. And because one of the things you want your dogs to do is to be really kind of connected to you, right? So there, and for our purposes, when there's no other dogs around and you either toss a treat on the floor or on the ground or you give the dog a treat, then they're not exactly sure when the treat is coming or when it's not coming. So their tendencies go from watching the environment all the time to watching you and the environment all the time. So they're going back and forth between the two of them. It doesn't impinge on the enjoyment at all. In fact, it's probably more enjoyable. But you get more focused just because you're kind of doing that. So I probably, if it were me, that's what I would be doing. I'd be doing kind of what I do on my walks because Flocka is not necessarily good with people. She's fine with other dogs. Although now, when she's got two other little dogs with her, she's like, yeah. And as soon as they're not there, so you can really see the difference in her behavior. And I use both of those techniques all the time. I don't want other dogs following me because they think I've got a treat. I have no desire to have it and be able to give another dog a treat. And at the same time, I want my dogs to think good things happen. It's not just because Trish is, you know, my boss. It's because she's a really generous boss. So do those sound reasonable?
And I feel bad because I feel like it stresses him out.
Probably stressing you out more than stressing him out.
Yeah, well, then he picks it up.
Yeah, I tell you, the two of you together. Yeah. But yeah, he's a tense dog. He carries it well, I think, you know. So, and he's learned to relax, certainly in your office and whatnot. But what we saw here is he's a dog who's like, I'm a little bit worried about the environment. Just not really happy about it. But I mean, you see him, which is really good. And he ate the bone back there, which is also really good. So I would say he's not terribly fearful, but he is somewhat anxious and somewhat fearful. So giving him something else to do would be good.
How about when she's at the shop, getting her out of the shop without him?
I would probably do the same thing. I'd probably kind of, you know, slip him on a leash and give him as much space as he needs to. But, you know, you'd have to be really careful about not telegraphing any anxiety that you might be feeling. It has to be, you have to, you know, fake it. You know,
yeah. Customers.
Yeah, that's right. Hi, how are you?
Hi, I love you.
Yeah. That's what you do.
And your little bubble up here says, you know that one.
Yeah. Yes, you've got these little things. Oh my God, that little bitch. Yeah. So, but if you, and I know the Petford Express is really into selling, right? They really want you to go out there and sell, so it must be hard.
It is, because it's not my personality.
Yeah, so you have to just pick it. So you're going to have him, you're going to be faking it with him too. So, you know, when I had a Cairn Terrier who was somewhat fearful, I'm in here, I'm an extrovert. When I'm outside, I'm very introverted, and I don't say hello to people on trails or anything, but I started to force myself to, because I wanted Sophie to think that strangers were nice instead of strangers being scary. So whenever I passed somebody, I'd say hello, and then I'd have Sophie do a trick. She was a little parent terrier, and she could do all kinds of tricks. And then give her a treat. And so after a while, she'd like see a person and go, "Yay! This is great! Here comes the trick!" And she would do a trick automatically, and then she'd get treated. And it forced me to be a little bit more extroverted than I wanted to be. But it was good. So, you know, you do have to get that kind of feeling of loosen yourself up, smile. Remember that most of the times when we're working, particularly when we're working with careful dogs, but even normally when we're working with any dogs, our faces are very concentrated and we do not have a smile on. So the dog is used to looking at your face that looks like this. And that is not a nice face, right? Or like this. You know, really, really concentrating hard, the resting bitch face.
What are you going to do next?
Yeah. And so what you do is you try to smile. I worked in radio for 20 years before I was in dogs. And in order to talk on the radio, if you talk the way you normally want to talk, it sounds dead. You have to really project lightness, and you have to literally smile when you're talking on the radio to this freaking microphone. You know, that's who you're talking to. But you have to talk like this, and everything has to be way more excited than it is in normal conversation, because then nobody can see your face. So everything that they're thinking has to come through your voice. That's how you want to be. Just a little bit more, not a whole lot more, but a little bit more than you ordinarily are. Okay. I'm thinking about being on the radio. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm so glad I'm out of that. Every year we did the same story. Every year, because, you know, there's the rainy season, then the dry season, then the this, and then that. I did news. I was a KCBS. Okay. So does that sound like a possible plan?
Yeah.
All right. Oh, it'll let me know how it goes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then you also have the issue with the dogs getting up, earlier than you wanted to get up.
Right.
Okay. So you want to explain what was going on and how it's been going?
I tried to take a video and I couldn't do it. Because the dogs wouldn't cooperate. Yeah. They would stop. So there's the three of them. The lab does the twirling. He sits there like the good boy and looks up at you like I'm perfect.
Of course he does. He just, doesn't he look like a dog ever do that?
And Baxter just barks. And he's 55 pounds, but his bark sounds like he's 200 pounds. It's really deep and really obnoxious. So Tricia told me to mix it up on when I give them breakfast or when they get fed, and so that's what I've been doing. Sometimes I get it when I get up. Sometimes I make my coffee. I go back and sit and drink my coffee, and they're all looking at me like,
where's my food?
What's up? Or I go feed the cats, or I put their bowls on the counter, and I don't fill them. I leave. I come back. And it has calmed Baxter down. I'd say 3 or 4 days, he reverted to really, really barking.
Yeah,
that's
an extinction burst.
Yeah. And now all I have to do is, if he starts doing it, I just put my finger up to my lips, and he stops.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't do it intentionally. I just told him, shh. And he's 11 years old, so.
Did he get a treat from Shushi?
He gets his food.
He gets his food, but he doesn't get his food for a couple minutes after that. It's not like he gets his food immediately, right?
Yeah, he has to sit now. He has to sit and wait for his food, and he has to wait until I tell him it's okay. And both of these guys...
And he has to wait until she's finished doing what she wants to do before he gets what he wants, or they all do.
Right.
Yeah.
And he'll sit there and just drool. They both do. I mean, you just have puddles while they're sitting there. It's really hysterical.
Yep.
And it hasn't stopped at 100%, but at least now I'd say probably 50% of the time, or he's going, wait a minute, should I do it or not?
So he's still thinking about it.
Yeah.
But at 11 years old, that's pretty damn good.
He's very smart.
Yeah.
He's a really smart dog. But I didn't like the behavior either because because he sits there like, I'm a good dog.
This guy?
Yeah. Yeah. And is he doing that because he doesn't understand it or he's trying to make it better?
He's probably trying to make it better. I think he's a peacekeeper.
Yeah. And I don't want to have the stress.
Poor baby. Yeah, I have to go to work to relax.
I know. Yeah. I have to go be the special dog for the day.
Yeah.
With everybody going, oh, look at this.
He's so nice.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, so I'll keep that up because eventually, by the way, this is the kind of thing when you start mixing up all your cues and whatnot, this is the kind of thing that if you inadvertently fall back into a habit, they will fall right back into that habit immediately. They will go back and they go, ah, okay, we can now tell mom what to do.
I have to think every day, how am I going to do it?
How am I going to mix this up?
And I have to make myself do it. Because I'll just go, God, I don't really have time for this. I'm just going to shove their food at them.
Right.
But then I stop and think, well, if I want to do this in my life and have success with my dogs and maybe another dog, I have to force myself to do it.
And it will become a habit after a while. You've been doing it for how long now?
3 weeks, I think.
3 weeks. It should start to, you'll feel a little bit better. Fairly shortly.
And I don't feel guilty anymore.
Guilt is not a good training tool.
No, it really is. I'm like, oh, I'm being so mean.
No, you're not. You're giving them their food.
I know, and I don't have to listen to the barking, which at 6 o'clock in the morning is not fun.
No,
it's really not. And I don't think the lab has learned anything. She, I think she's a little psychotic.
There's no reason to think she isn't. I mean, you have to figure that we have a certain percentage of our population is psychotic, or at least highly neurotic, and it's probably exactly the same with dogs. And probably even cats and other animals, although I would imagine that the psychoses probably are higher, in fact I've even read some stuff on it, the psychoses are higher in social beings than they are in asocial beings. And the reason is because an awful lot of our brain power has to be geared at interacting with others. Whereas that doesn't necessarily occur with cats. I mean, they interact to a certain extent with people, but it's all on their terms, right? So that's not, there's no pleasing or anything else that's going on. So that kind of thing, that actually makes sense to me, that the social brain has more of a tendency to have aberrant behavior. All right, Chloe, how's it going?
It's going well. I did kind of the same thing with the food. I didn't realize what a creature habit I had become. Mm-hmm. And so therefore my dogs were. So Jack, my lab, who I brought in last week, got really into in the 7 days we've been doing it, understanding that when he settles, that good things happen. So good things happen when he's calm, like getting his food. The puppy, on the other hand, will romp around and kind of whine because he's still trying to process why the food isn't coming. For example, and Jack will just stare at him like, dude, you just lay down. But he doesn't quite understand it yet. So, I wait till both of them are calm. And it's like last night we went to the A's game, and so we fed them when we got home, which was late. But, both of them we got home and said, put all our stuff down, and they both just were like, okay, and went and laid down. And so then we fed them, and it was great. But for them, the inconsistency. For Jack in particular, I've already noticed that it's helping a lot. I brought the orange balls back out, not a problem at all. They've been totally fine with them. Jack, as far as the demand barking goes, he did it. I was cooking dinner and he did it to me, so I leashed him up and I put him outside and shut the door and waited like for a 10 count and then let him in and unleashed him. And the side eye he gave me, he was like, dumbfounded. He literally was like, and so then he just gave me this side eye and went downstairs to the master room, which is where that's his safe zone, and was down there. Like, he punished me for like 20 minutes. It was just so funny. Then he came up like, okay, I'm not mad anymore, So we've only had to do that, I think, 3 times. And each time he totally understands, like, okay, I get it now, And I think he actually likes the 15 to 20 minutes of alone time when we break him in the bedroom, because the puppy's not bugging him, it's quiet, you know, he just gets to center his sheet, and every time that I put him in there, he's gone to sleep, so every time I've opened up the door, he's still been passed out.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. He's like, oh, I can come out now, you know, he does not mind at all. So I think the real test will be when somebody comes over and I can try him.
Yeah.
And see what he does.
It's
going well.
But that's good.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it.
Me too.
It would be awful if you come back and go, no, none of this stuff can work. It just didn't work. I'm sorry. But, you know,
I'm waiting for that extinction burst. Like, I am expecting that to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you do get it. And sometimes you get it at odd times, and all of a sudden it's like, it's almost like a spoiled kid going, I just ran it! And then they go give up. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. Kick the tire. You know, they leave. Then it's done.
Yeah.
You've got to be really consistent and strong. It's really
you do. You have to be. You can't kind of give in and say, and again, guilt is not a good training tool. It is just because we feel guilty doesn't mean that that we should act on it. You might feel it still. You can go, oh, I wish I could take Heather with me, you know, because Heather wanted to go. I wish I could do that, but I don't want to because of a variety of reasons, so I'm going to rise above my emotion and actually do the behavior that I want to do. That's what we can do that. They can't do that, so we get to do it for them.
Well, and I think so many times, like, the other thing I don't like about dog parks is people are always going, oh, no, my dog's really friendly. Oh, no, my dog's this and my dog's that. Or you say, you know, stay away from my dog. They don't listen to you.
No, training people is hard.
Yes.
Yeah, training people is way harder than it is to train. You know, in fact, I think from a consulting point of view, some of the hardest people to train are husbands. Because usually they don't have the slightest interest in actually doing it. They want, you know, I figured out what it is. It's because so many guys they've never taken care of anything because nobody made them take care of something. And so consequent to that, what happens is that they're used to their mom's taking care of it or whatever. So my client yesterday, she said her, you know, she was having problems with her family, not at her house because she lives alone, but her family otherwise. And I said, who? And she said, my dad. And I was talking about that. And they can be fantastic trainers. They just often don't want to put the time and effort into it. And she said she'd come back from 2 months in Italy. And she says, this is really bad there. The culture is one of the women do all the caretaking and the men, you know, they go out and are living and all that. Kind of like us in the 50s or whatever. So it is kind of interesting. But any people are hard. Anybody else that you live with can be difficult because the person that's making the commitment is you. And nobody else kind of wants to go along with that commitment. They really don't. They want, you know, they just want it to get fixed. I understand completely.
Now, my tenant downstairs feeds them when I'm not home, and
they'll probably still bark at her.
I'm just him. And I'm wondering if I should just have him stop doing that. I mean, they're not going to starve to death.
How long would he be gone?
Well, sometimes I'll get home at 9 o'clock at night.
Oh, they're going to be fine. Yeah, I would probably stop.
Okay, yeah. Because he pipes them up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, I'm wondering.
You're all about trying to calm down now.
Right.
And there, and he wants to hang him up. Yeah, I would definitely consider that, for sure. Yeah.
I have a question on a completely different subject. Is that okay?
That's okay.
Okay. So, the foster that I got a couple weeks ago and my own dog, they kind of like working out their relationship. And sitting
these are two labs, right?
Two labs. Two yellow labs. Same size, same weight. So what's starting to happen is they both want to be independent. They both want to be top dog, so to speak. I mean, they both want lots of attention. And it's starting to happen. My own dog, Cooper, kind of retreated into himself a little bit when she first got there, but now he's kind of coming out again, reclaiming his bed. which she kind of took over. And so so what she started doing was, she started, it seemed to me like she was feeling sad or depressed or pouting a little bit because she didn't get to be on his bed anymore. So now at nighttime, I come out in the morning and she has climbed up on one of the chairs, one of the overstuffed chairs, and sleeps up there. He's not even in the room, he's in my bedroom, but she can't come in my bedroom. So I want, I don't know if this is my imagination, but they both get a little bit depressed or withdrawn when they're not, I guess, feeling enough attention or affection. And I obviously can't let her be sleeping on the chairs at nighttime because she's gonna get adopted and I don't want her handing off with that behavior. And I don't want my own dog to get depressed because he's a mama's boy. So I'm not sure what I should be looking for, or, I mean, I get a little
bit. Do they seem happy at some time?
Oh yeah, she wants to play with him. Mm-hmm. He's 14 and arthritic and in pain, so he's not much of a player.
How old is she?
She's, I don't really know, I'd say about 9. But she's got a lot of energy, she's a great dog, but they're not really in sync with each other, and I just want to make sure each one is, you know, kind of happy and relaxed.
So are you giving them time on their own?
With me? Yeah, I walk them separately.
Okay. And then they do they both have to do stuff for you, like sit before they eat and things like that?
Yeah. And I feed them separately, separate water bowls.
So I think you should stop worrying.
Oh. Okay.
I think you are doing as much as, I mean that in all sincerity. I think you are doing a lot for them. You can't change their emotion. That has to happen.
Okay.
Right? But you are giving them their own time. You are giving them, you know, what they need, and you're saying these are my rules in this house, and I love you both in as much as I can love the foster. But yeah, don't worry. They're fine. They're fine. Yeah.
Huh? Oh
yeah. Yeah, well, it's higher than the. You know,
yeah, she likes height. She's status oriented.
I've got a picture.
She wants this running.
I've got a picture of her.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
I think this is quick.
Sometimes quick expressions are long answers.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Anyway, I have a miniature Chihuahua mix, Stevie, and she's about 7, and she's a little barker. I had to do some work on the barking. She barks when people come to the door. Not too bad, tells me. But sometimes when someone is coming to the door that is a service person that's only going to be there for a couple of minutes, she's going to bark like crazy because they're a stranger. So I put her in the bedroom and close the door. Well, one day I did that. And I came into the bedroom and there was a little piece of poop on the floor and a piece of poop on the bed.
Mm.
And I thought, is she punishing me or is she manipulating me or what?
So had she barked when she was in there, when you put her in there?
I don't remember. I think she, yeah, she did.
Okay, and it only happened that one time?
As the only time that ever happened.
All right, I think what happened is that she got very excited and that caused her to loosen her bowels. And because she really did have to go to the bathroom already, she had an accident.
Yeah, okay.
Because if it were, and it's not that these things don't happen, because they can happen, but if they were going to happen, you would see it happening on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Whenever you put her back in there, she would go onto the bed and pee or poop, or right next to the toilet. And so if you're not seeing that, I would call this an accident. It's almost... I mean, we need to cut them some slack, right? So whenever there's a bad behavior, you always figure that if they do it just one time, we give them a pass.
She looked stunned.
Yeah, she probably was.
Like, what
the heck's going on? Yes. Well, I mean, you know, if you've ever been sick and suddenly had a, you know, oh my goodness, what just happened? That's kind of what can happen. And they certainly don't know what it is. Oh, you just discovered you have an eye. That's very cute.
So,
yes.
My audience.
Why do you need to hear the bell? I should walk me up at 6.
They want you to get up at 6?
Yeah, and it's not that they don't care about the food, they want to interact with me at 6. Uh-huh. And so it's like, one is like bouncing on the bed with his ball, and the other one is like,
Mom, the sun's up!
Mom, you know, and I'm afraid, does she really have to go outside, or is she?
You go with guilt being a motivator.
So I think, is she going to pee downstairs if I don't let her out?
And
so,
has she?
No.
And what do you want to do?
I want to go back to sleep.
Okay, so you would rather not get up at 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd rather get up at 7.
You'd rather get up at 7 o'clock?
So I usually tell them go back to sleep.
So do you get up at 6 o'clock?
It depends on how urgent the moaning is. Really hard to ignore the moment.
I need a video, an audio of this. What I would start doing is they need to get up just like with Susan. They need to do something on your schedule, not yours on theirs. But if they're used to getting you up at 6 o'clock, then you're probably going to start off waiting at least 10 minutes. And then, you know, getting up and trying to time it so that they're not actually moaning when you do get up. But even if they are, you get up then. So maybe for 3 days, you get up at 6:10 or 6:15. And then for 3 days, you push it to 6:20. And then you go until you get to 7 o'clock. So you're just going to push it. And it is nice if they're not barking or not making their noises. But that's not relevant. It's like you kind of go, I'm just getting up now, I don't care what you're doing. And you go through what you're doing, what you're planning on doing, and then you just do it. It is hard. There's no question about it. It is really, really, you got two dogs both telling you it's time to get up, Mama. You know, it's like having two little kids going, hey, this is gonna be good. But you can push them back. And the most wonderful thing you can do is to teach the dog that they get up when you get up. So if it's a weekend day and you can get up later, then they get up later. It's really nice if you can do that. But you can't do it in one fell swoop. It has to be done incrementally.
I mean, it's the little licks in the ear.
One of my Karen Terriers would get up on my chest and just stare at me. Is it time to get up now? And of course, it was adorable, and I got up, but you know, but we don't have anybody who gets us up now. And I think it's just because we have a tendency to not accept that. So you get to do that, you know. Okay, so the moral of today's class is don't worry, be happy. All right.
That's great.
We'll see you next week. Bring your class, bring your questions. And I think I did not actually choose a consultation. So.
No, I was saying
me.